Great to be here with you this morning. My name is Shane Gould, one of the pastors here. And again, just as Pastor Mark said, if you're just joining us for the first time, or if you're on vacation and you're out of town, but you're here with us this morning, we are really thrilled that you're with us. We believe that God's got something for you. God's got something for all of us this morning, every time we look to the scriptures. But this summer, we've been working through the last half of the book of Genesis, as we explore and follow the lives of Abraham's descendants, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And Genesis, if you don't know a lot about it, it's really the beginning of God's unfolding promise to bless and bring people to himself from every culture and every nation. And it all began in Genesis. It's the story of this man, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their families. And it happened many years ago. But it's also a story about you and I. And as we start reading about the lives of and families of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, there's just so much there for us to see about the gracious heart of God that just desires to invade our lives and begin to shape our lives with his blessing. And so that's what we want to focus on. And the title of this teaching series is called Beauty and Brokenness, the unfolding story of God's redemption. And this morning's message in particular is just simply entitled Hope for the Broken. In Genesis, it's in Genesis that God began a grand plan of redemption for the world by calling this one man Abraham and his family into a very special relationship, promising to be their God, promising to prosper him and his family, protect and bless them. And so in Genesis chapter 22, God repeats this promise that he's made, saying, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. But what I want to just draw to our attention this morning is that God promised not just to bless Abraham, but through him, all people. Out of this one family, God eventually brings the gift of his own son, Jesus, which is something that Abraham could probably never have imagined. And it's amazing as you look at the Bible and as you just read through the genealogy of Jesus in the opening chapter of the Gospel of Matthew in the New Testament, as it just traces Jesus' earthly lineage, descendant by descendant by descendant, all the way back to the families of Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham. God made a promise, a huge promise, to Abraham and Sarah, but it was a promise that had you and I in mind as God made that promise. As God pointed to the stars and he pointed to the sand, and he said to Abraham, look at the descendants you're going to eventually have. Some of those were physical descendants, but most of them, spiritual daughters and sons, as God used Abraham to bring about Jesus, to bless the world and to invite people to himself, including you and I here this morning. This is a grand story with so much hope in it for us. So as we look at this story, I've been praying and I've been just asking God that he'd renew our hope as we see God at work in the life of Jacob's family, which was incredibly broken. And I don't know what your family is like, but I know mine is far from perfect. It's a place of love, but it's also a place of brokenness. Now, growing up, I basically watched three TV shows, and all three of them were about families. Family Ties, Who's the Boss, and The Cosby Show. Anybody watch those shows along with me? These were the formative years of my TV watching, the 1980s. And in the 80s, I just want you to know that there was no such thing as a dysfunctional family. And that's simply because The Simpsons or Married with Children hadn't yet been created. So nobody knew what that was. But we have these three beautiful families. And if you're both old enough and young enough to have watched Family Ties, you'll remember that just about every episode was about Alex P. Keaton, a young, ambitious, yet nerdy younger brother, played by Michael J. Fox, always scheming to push his right-wing agenda to give power to the strong, wealth to the mighty, to the horror of his left-wing parents. While his older sister, Mallory, remember that? Some of you do. It's a total inside joke. would be constantly finding her way in and out of drama with her deadbeat boyfriend, Nick. And every episode would go through this drama and tumultuous conversation. And then the mom and dad would bring in the voice of reason. And I just always wanted to be Alex P. Keaton. You know, I always wanted to push that right-wing agenda, power to the strong, you know, money to me, and let the weak look after themselves. Forget about broken people. Let's move on, you know. That just never really worked out, though. I find myself being on the other end often. I'm the broken. I'm the weak. I'm the one who's been left behind. But God's reformed me. And he's helped me see that in the middle of all those realities that I find myself in is him. Working at his blessing on my life, despite all my deficiencies and despite all my failures and setbacks and despite maybe what I think I don't have. These shows had it all, I got to tell you. These shows had it all. I mean, in 1 hour, the Keatons, the Bowers, the Cosbys, they laughed, they cried, they made up, and they learned a new life moral, all in 1 hour. Life happened in a 1 hour, they lived happily ever after segment. It was truly beautiful and entertaining. But it wasn't a very realistic picture of the pain of life's brokenness, of the loose ends that we find. You know, when it comes to the Bible, we don't find fiction. And we don't find contrived, happily ever after stories. Instead, when you read the Bible serves us with stories of real people encountering real brokenness and experiencing real pain with real loose ends. But in doing so, the Bible offers us real hope. I hope the Cosby Show or Family Ties never offered me. Amidst the brokenness, the imperfection, and the sin of real people, and in today's case, we look at the life of Jacob and his family, God continues his beautiful work of redeeming and reconciling and transforming people so that not only do they begin to be shaped by God's goodness and his blessing, but they also begin to mediate that same love, that same blessing, that same pattern of life, that same favor that God's given them out of his total grace to others. And so this morning we're going to pick up the story of Genesis and we're going to look at chapter 29 and this story of Jacob and his broken family, picking up at chapter 29 where we left off 2 weeks ago, where Jacob, the grandson of Abraham, leaves his father Isaac and the land of Canaan to go on a journey, an incredible journey, an epic journey to find a wife, to find a family of his own and begin to become financially independent, enough so that he can eventually return to this land of Canaan that he has to now leave so he can receive the promise that God has given him. And so like a movie, the story starts out really good, but soon encounters the real brokenness of life. And isn't that often the case? Often chapters in our lives and situations in our lives, they start off really good, but for some reason they soon get off track and they soon encounter pain and brokenness and things that we didn't expect. And so if you've got a Bible here, I want to encourage you to turn to Genesis chapter 29, verse 1, which is page 44 in those blue Bibles in front of you if you don't have one. So I really encourage you to grab a Bible of some kind, whether it's your own or a blue one, and turn with me to chapter 29, verse 1, page 44. Now this morning, our story covers a lot of ground. So I'm going to lead us through some highlights of the story as we make our way from chapter 29 to the end of 31. And so we'll be skipping along, but follow me as you can, and much of the scripture is going to be on the screen. But reading Genesis chapter 29, verses 1 to 6. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. There he saw a well in the open country with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from that well. Jacob asked the shepherds, "My brothers, where are you from?" "We're from Haran," they replied. He said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" "Yes, we know him," they answered. Then Jacob asked them, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. When Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of his uncle Laban, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. Jacob's journey, this epic journey to find a wife that his father Isaac sends him on, begins like a fairy tale. He meets Rachel in the open fields, the girl of his dreams, a beautiful shepherdess. But like a lot of men, before he knows it, he finds himself married. Thank you for getting that. But in a marriage he never expected. And so dropping down to verse 16, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, whatever that means. But Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Women, don't you want a man like that who'd work 7 years? Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay here with me." So verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, he's very forthright, "Give me my wife. My time is completed and I want to make love to her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob made love to her. And Laban gave his servant Zilpah to his daughter as her attendant. And here's the punchline. Verse 25. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you've done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "Well, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish the daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work." As you can imagine, Jacob is reeling. He's shocked and he's angry. This is not what he signed up for. And suddenly his dream of marrying Rachel has become a bit of a nightmare. Now, if we know a little bit about the character of Jacob, we know that scheming and deception is something that Jacob is no stranger to. I mean, that is how he is rolled. It's just that he's never been on the other end of the raw deal like he is now. And so suddenly Jacob is finding out that sometimes, and the Bible states this in sowing and reaping, what goes around comes around. And in his new father-in-law, Laban, Jacob has met his match. Now, in reading this story, there's all kinds of things in between the lines that we may never understand. And I'm not exactly sure how Jacob could not have known it was Leah and not Rachel that he spent the night with. But he suddenly finds himself married to the wrong girl and now ends up having to marry two wives, two women, instead of one. I mean, this is a comical and painful story. But to understand the story, it's important to understand two things about the ancient world. And the first was, it was customary for the groom and his family to pay a bride price to the bride's family in order to marry. In this case, 7 years of labor. But it wasn't exactly as if Jacob was trying to buy Rachel. It might look like that, but that's not exactly what's happening here. Rather, the bride price was held in trust by the family's bride to ensure that in the event that a husband would abandon his new wife, she wouldn't be left financially destitute without someone to be by her side to support her. The second thing you want to know is that it was also customary in the ancient world for a man to often have more than one wife. And so throughout Genesis and the Old Testament, you find large families consisting of multiple lives. Now, this has never been God's design. This has never been the way that God has set things up. But out of the hardness of people's hearts, and particular men's hearts, this is something that God permitted and put up with for a time. By the time you get to the New Testament repeatedly says that a man should be the husband of one wife. And there are few, if any, positive portrayals of marriages involving multiple wives. Writer and Christian thinker Tim Keller writes, "Many years ago when I first started reading the book of Genesis, it was very upsetting to me. Here are all these spiritual heroes, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and look how they treat women. They engage in polygamy and they buy and sell their wives. It was awful to read about their stories. And Keller is writing about just the beginning point in his journey of getting his head around what the Bible and how God has worked himself and his promise out through history. And then he goes on. There are two institutions present in the book of Genesis that were universal in ancient cultures, polygamy and primogeniture. Polygamy said a husband could have multiple wives. And primogeniture, fancy word, said the oldest son got everything, all the power, all the money. In other words, the oldest son basically ruled over everyone else in the family. And that is the blessing that Jacob had sought and tricked his brother and father into giving him, as we read earlier 2 weeks ago. But when you read the book of Genesis, he goes on, you'll see two things. First of all, in every generation, polygamy wreaks havoc. Having multiple wives is an absolute disaster. Socially, culturally, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, and relationally. There's no defense for this in the scriptures. Second, when it comes to primogeniture, in every generation, God favors the younger son over the older. If you read closely, you'll see that. He favors Abel, not Cain. Isaac, not Ishmael. Jacob, not Esau. One way or another. And as you keep on reading, you begin to realize what the book of Genesis is doing. It is subverting, not supporting those ancient institutions at every turn. This morning's message is really about God's work in the midst of our personal brokenness. But even here, as you see God working things out through Scripture from Old Testament to New, you see that even when culture itself is broken, like it has been with polygamy, God is at work subverting it and transforming it. So let's get back to the story. Jacob has now two wives, one he loves and one he does not. To make matters worse, both Leah and Rachel experience seasons of barrenness and wanting to bear children. And both respond with anguish and bitter jealousy. And so Jacob is caught in a marriage triangle of jealousy and pain. And one that has love and doesn't have love. Genesis chapter 29, verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he enabled her to conceive. But Rachel remained childless. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, for she said, "It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now." Moving to chapter 30, verse 1. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, "Give me children or I'll die." Jacob became angry with her and said, "Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children? Think about it. What are you asking me here?" Then she said, "Here is Bilhah, my servant. Sleep with her so that she can bear children for me, and I too can build a family through her." Jacob's family is filled with jealousy and anger and craziness. Leah and Rachel even begin to give their children names that voice their pain and rivalry. Effectively, their children become trophies of their place in the family. Now, if that's not dysfunctional, I mean, I don't know what is. Each woman tries to win love or social standing by just having one more child. In both inviting Jacob at some point to sleep with their servants in a way to find another child, even if it's through a surrogate someone else. This family, this triangle of conflict and pain and jealousy, is the family that God's chosen to use to bring about blessing that he wants to mediate through them to the rest of the world. Well, the brokenness of Jacob's family doesn't stop there. God begins to bless Jacob with material wealth. God soon positions Jacob to become financially independent so he can begin to return now to the land of Canaan and receive the promise that God had given him and his descendants. But before Jacob can leave, Laban, his controlling and manipulative father, steps in and begs Jacob to stay. Chapter 30, verse 25. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much I've done for you. But Laban said to him, if I found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Can you hear the manipulation in that conversation? Please, Jacob, don't leave me. God's using you to bless me. And I found out through some kind of Ouija board or other God or something that God's hands on you, so don't go. Please, God is the one. He's using you to bless me. You can't leave. It seems like nothing is really beneath Laban. You know, manipulating Jacob first to marry both his daughters, and now pulling the God card out in the conversation as a way to manipulate him to stay. I mean, has anyone ever done that to you? Saying, you know, God would want you to do this, and kind of pulls out the God card, trying to control you. That's happened to me. And Laban is doing it to Jacob. And Jacob falls for it. Giving in to Laban, he enters into a new financial arrangement, but one again that leaves Jacob with the short end of the stick. And so Jacob, once again outwitted by his father-in-law, finds a way to still prosper, even while staying. And he does so by craftily trying to manipulate the breeding of their livestock that Jacob is in charge of for Laban. And so, verse 42, so the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones to Jacob. In this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Jacob continues to receive God's blessing in the midst of being controlled by his manipulative father-in-law. But unfortunately, his prosperity just seems to bring more trouble. Leah and Rachel's brothers soon become jealous and angry of their brother-in-law's continual success. And so growing ever fearful of his father-in-law and his brother-in-law's jealousy, Jacob makes plans to secretly run away. Verse 31, chapter 31, verses 1. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father. And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude toward him was not what it had been. Dropping down to verse 20. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had, crossed the Euphrates River, and headed for the hill country of Gilead. Well, Laban gets wind of Jacob leaving, and in hot pursuit, pursues Jacob with his boys for 7 days until they finally catch Jacob and have the conversation. Why are you leaving? You can't do this. But as we read the story, what we see is that the best the two can do, and this time Jacob is not going to go back, is to agree to disagree. It's not really a happy ending. It's an ending with emotional loose ends. And they come to a truce. And so they make a mutual agreement to simply leave each other alone. And to witness it, they set up a pile of stones as a monument so that the other will not forget the truce. Because they don't trust each other. Verses 51 to 53. Laban also said to Jacob, here is this heap. Here is this pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. This is not a very loving relationship. This is a relationship without trust. This is a truce. This is not peace. But let's ask for God's blessing on it anyway. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge between us. And so Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. So Jacob and Laban agree and part ways. Jacob's family was a mess. The story reads like a soap opera. And if you could sum up Jacob's life in one word, well, I'm not sure you could. But I do think that you might be able to sum up his life in two words. And the first would be broken. Absolutely broken. Jacob is desperate to get the family inheritance. And so he deceives his father and his brother. He gets it, but he also gets alienated. And that's partly why he had to leave Canaan. And this is where he is now. Jacob is desperate for a wife, but he ends up marrying two. And one he doesn't love. Jacob is desperate for material wealth and to be financially independent. And he succeeds and God blesses him. But it comes to him at a great price, producing all kinds of tension and jealousy. But Jacob's not the only one desperate in this family. Jacob's wives are equally as desperate. They're the real desperate housewives, if you will. One is desperate for love. But listen to this. One is desperate for love, getting pregnant for the sake of attention. Emotional maturity is real low. The other, Rachel, is desperate for children, willing to have her husband sleep with a surrogate someone else to get the status of being a mother. Jacob's family is filled with difficulty and barrenness and mistreatment and conflict. In a word, Jacob's family is incredibly broken. But while it may be broken, the wonderful thing to read is it is simultaneously blessed. And this is something that might be hard for us this morning to get our hands around. When we read the story closely, our minds around, when we read the story closely, we find that through all of the struggle, Jacob's life was actually also under constant blessing. Now, that may seem strange and out of order to us, because often when we think, well, if I'm going to put my life in God's hands, it's all going to be better. It's all going to be good, and that will be the end of trouble and the end of brokenness. But what we find is that in the midst of the brokenness, God is bringing blessing. And the two interact at the same time. And that's what we find in every biblical life. Brokenness and blessing. And isn't that what we find in our lives? Isn't there brokenness in your life? Isn't there brokenness in your family? But if you'll have eyes of faith, isn't there also constant blessing? If you'll open your eyes to see it. Throughout the story, God is at work behind the scenes. In the midst of what was broken, God was graciously blessing. And so we see in chapter 29, verse 1, when the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb. Chapter 30, verse 22, it says that God also remembered Rachel. He listened to her and opened her womb. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. In fact, God ends up giving Jacob 12 sons. Using the rivalry of these wives to produce more and more children. And thereby ensuring that Jacob has a strong and big family. Later in chapter 31, verse 4 to 9, Jacob recognizes God's hand of blessing on his life despite all of the pain. And he says to Leah and Rachel, I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I work for your father with all my strength. And he begins to fill us in on some of this hardship that we don't see in all of the story. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. Yet your father, however, God has not allowed him to harm me. And so God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. Even in getting a raw deal, God's allowed me to prosper. That's God at work in my life. And it was God, we find out, who told Jacob to go back to the land of Canaan with the promise that God would be with him. Leaving Laban was no easy task. He's a grown man running away in secret. He's utterly controlled and under the thumb of his father-in-law, like a lot of us emotionally with our extended families. And Jacob was no different. But it was God's idea to break free from that and to run and to go. I'm not sure it was God's idea for him to go secretly. I think that God wanted Jacob to be a person of courage and character and truthfulness, which is difficult. It's a challenging road. But all the same, it was God's idea for Jacob to go and finally make a break from the control of Laban. Abraham and his family were a lot like you and I. You know, sometimes they took three steps forward, and other times they're taking 2 steps back. But God was still at work, blessing their lives, despite all of that. And whether you realize it or not this morning, whether I realize it or not, God is at work bringing about blessing in the midst of your brokenness, no matter how broken your life may be. And you may be here this morning thinking, I don't really have a broken life. The only thing I could say to you is just give it time. Just give it time. And I'm not trying to give a word of death here. I'm just simply saying we need to have a realistic picture of who we are. And sometimes we look in the mirror with rose-colored glasses. But I believe that if you'd ask the people closest to you that you work with from your extended family, I think they could probably help you see some of the brokenness in your life. Just a guess. Just a guess. But if you're also here this morning, maybe in a place of hopelessness, because you see this ongoing pattern of brokenness in your life, you need to know that there's also an ongoing pattern of blessing when you commit your life to the covenant and the promise that God has given you in His Son Jesus that began with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and continues on. We're living the fulfillment of the promise out in the middle of our own brokenness. The Lord remembered Leah. God remembered Rachel. He directed Jacob. He's going to remember. He does remember you. He will direct you. He wants you to be free of issues. He wants to bless your life. He may not immediately move all of the barriers, but He will overcome them. Much of what Jacob endured was not his fault, but a whole lot of it was. And so there's a place for Jacob to be transformed, but he's also living in a broken world, manipulated by others who have not yet been healed up either. And so he cannot escape brokenness until God breaks in, and God does so. And we're going to keep reading about the way that God keeps revealing himself to Jacob and keeps transforming his life in the middle of all this brokenness and craziness. God never forgot them. He'll never forget you. God kept showing up to bless, to protect, to lead, despite the jealousy, despite the conflict, despite the mistreatment. Genesis tells the story of Jacob's family from a perspective of faith. If we read Jacob's story apart from what the scriptures say, we may never have come to that conclusion that his life was a life under God's blessing. We may have just simply seen all of the failure and all the crazy dysfunction. We might have just seen that Jacob's family was hopelessly broken but got a few lucky breaks. But the Bible really tells a different story. Genesis gives us a perspective of life based on faith, where God is at work bringing about the blessing of children, bringing about the blessing of provision, bringing about an incredibly meaningful destiny. God wants you and I this morning to see our own lives with eyes of faith. Not just a broken life that got a few lucky breaks, but God at work behind the scenes. One of my favorite worship albums right now is Be Lifted Up. It's a Bethel CD. And I love the song Forever and a Day by Brian and Jen Johnson. And here's the chorus. It says, when I go to bed, you are near. When I wake up, you are there. When I say your name, you are here. When I walk in faith, you're everywhere. You catch and save every tear I cry. You journal every day about my life. Your love for me reaches to the sky. I am yours and you are mine. It's an incredible song that just speaks about the absolute commitment that God has to you and I. Can you look at your life this morning with eyes of faith? Can you see God maybe everywhere? You know, essentially, Jacob, Leah, and Rachel, even Laban, were all living on what you might call a half-life. Blocked by sorrow and hostility. You know, Leah's got children but not love. Her husband Rachel's got love but no children. Jacob's got money, but no freedom. And to those of us here this morning who are stuck maybe in a half-life, caught in a half-life of some kind, God is just offering us hope this morning. That's a simple message. There is hope for you and I. That's the title of the message. Genesis isn't celebrating brokenness by any means. It's simply celebrating the triumph of His grace over our sin and our brokenness. I just want to invite the worship team to come forward now. And to come and help us respond to this. I want to invite you to stand with me. So let's stand together.